Great. Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. I'm Andy O'Donnell, and this is the Office 365 session for education. So if you're not interested in that, you're in the wrong room, and you can leave now. But hopefully you're all here. You wanted to be. I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team. So I work in Redmond, sit in a building next to a lot of the engineering folks so we can make sure that we're driving that the best experience. And I've been at Microsoft for 3 years, and before that, I came from the University of Michigan. Are there any Michigan people here, just out of curiosity? Yeah? Go Blue! Woo! Oh. I mean, I was asking for it by putting that out there. So, but yeah, so anyways, we had a lot of different systems that we used at the University of Michigan, so that's why I think it's a lot of fun to be able to do this session here a couple years later and talk about what we're going to be delivering with Office 365. So there's really just two main objectives for this session. One, I want to make sure that everyone's grounded in what 365 has, go over both from an end user perspective and talk a little bit about the IT administration side of that and what that can mean for education, and cover off just a couple quick scenarios that you're going to be getting. And then I want to spend a lot of the time also talking about the Live at EDU upgrade plan and communicate what's going to happen there. It's kind of dark, but it would be great to get a show of hands. How many of you are using Live at EDU today? So I know, oh yeah, that's going to be important. At least half of you, maybe a little bit more. So you're going to be interested in that and what the plan is for that migration. Upgrade. I'll just jump in here and talk. Kind of start with the overview of 365. We'll do kind of a portal demo after I do an introduction to 365. We'll go into the education scenarios, do kind of more of an end user demo, and then do some Live at EDU migration stuff, and then finish off with service updates. Since Office 365 is a service, we've been rolling out updates for a year, and we'll dive into that. So first off, for those of you who aren't familiar with some of the benefits of having a service like 365, which is classified as a software as a service, compared to, say, infrastructure as a service or platform as a service like Windows Azure, what it means for Office 365 is that we're managing the software layer. So you no longer have to worry about patching your servers. You don't have to worry about adding new hardware. It means that updates can be rolled out much, much faster because we're controlling the update process. We're able to build the features and release them. It also means from an update standpoint, the services, since they were designed to work together from the engineers, you now get that full experience end-to-end instead of just bits and pieces. And also the sheer scale of the service itself. Hopefully, some of you have come by the Office 365 booth. We have a great little exhibit there. We've got a nice model of a data center. We have a video about our data center. So if you're interested in learning more about how we can scale to meet the EDU customers, which are by far some of our largest customers, when you think of just the number of universities and the scale of a lot of these institutions or nationwide education institutions, definitely some of our largest and most and can be tricky with the sheer size that some institutions are, but we can do that. So what are the key components to Office 365? There's four main ones that we consider the core, and then I'll talk more about the server side ones will be the main focus of today. So the four kind of core parts that are designed to work together is, of course, the Office client. The Office client, it can be got through Office 365, and I'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. But the Office client is obviously an integral part of that, both for both Mac and PC. Then you get SharePoint Online, which is our basically collaboration and file sharing feature functionality. This is a great tool in education for classrooms, and I'll just show kind of a mock-up one in a little bit. Link Online, which is your IM presence, online meetings, allows people to contact each other. It has lots of different endpoints so that you can easily communicate wherever you are. And then Exchange Online, and that's the one, obviously, that is the most relevant because if you're coming from Live at EDU or you've been using our other email services in the past, that's where you're really going to see the nice perks like the 25-gigabyte mailbox and some of the other features and benefits there with Office 365. So what exactly is the Office 365 options for education? So the main thing you can see here is that at the bottom, you have upgrade from Live at EDU. And so everyone who upgrades from Live at EDU will be upgraded into an exchange plan. And so that will be free for students, faculty, and alumni. So you can start managing your alumni through it as well. And then the other option, though, is that you can step up to an A2 plan where you get a lot more functionality. So in the pure upgrade, if you just don't do anything and you just upgrade to, you will be in Exchange, and then you can later on add the A2 plan, which includes Link and SharePoint. Now, the A2 plan also includes the Office web apps, and so that's the other component. So if users are used to using, say, the web apps through SkyDrive, the web apps are then included in SharePoint with A2. So it's a nice upgrade step, and it gives you a lot more functionality than you have today with Live at EDU in terms of those additional services. Then in addition, there's the A3 plan, which gives you the Office client. That's the main differentiator, but it also does enable some more functionality on the server side, some of the advanced BI capabilities in SharePoint, some of the more compliance and regulatory e-discovery options inside of Exchange. And then A4 is the voice connection for the Link server to do on-prem to telephone call connection, basically, with your Link servers. The other important thing about these plans is that they also provide access to on-prem servers. So if you have A2 and you have some users, say faculty and staff, that you're managing your Exchange servers on-premise, and that provides the license to access those on-premise servers as well as the service. So moving to this obviously has a lot of benefits from that standpoint, as it covers you both on-premise CALs and it covers your online subscription if your users are accessing it that way. Yes. So the question was, can you mix plans? You can absolutely mix plans and buy the right number of licenses and move licenses around, assign them to different users. That's absolutely possible. And I'll show you where you do that in the administration session in the admin when I do that demo. So now I just want to go through some of the kind of high-level options from an IT standpoint. What are some of the important things for Office 365? So starting just some of the things that we have to help keep IT in control of the cloud, there's a couple different ways you can implement identity, and I'll go into that, but we do support federated identity and single sign-on with Office 365. We also have role-based access so that within the admin portal, you don't have to make everyone a global administrator. You're able to actually choose to have, say, a billing administrator or just a password reset administrator if you want to have that to, say, a help desk. So you don't have to you can very granularly control who has what capabilities from an admin standpoint inside of your 365 tenant. And then the other is simplified management. Because all of these services are now being run together, we give you one web portal that you can go to and administer both, or all of your services, including Link Exchange and SharePoint, through one portal. There's also a lot of powerful PowerShell commands, and if you want to see more on those, I recommend you come to the booth. We have a cool command center set up with some PowerShell that you can run against an Office 365 server and see how that works. Another area that Office 365 really focuses on is we want to make sure that you feel very secure with your data being stored in our cloud. We always consider it to be your data, and we don't do any sort of data mining on it. We make sure it's very private, and we never have access to it, to your data. The engineers are operating at the software level. They don't have access to your data. If for some reason you have a service request or there's some sort of malfunction where you have to get access, we have to access the data for some reason, you have full control and transparency into that process, and it's usually on your behalf. You're asking us to do something with it, and that would be the only reason we need to do it. But we've abstracted that away, so none of the engineers sitting in Redmond have direct access to your data on a basis. And then next, security and compliance. We have very secure connections, HTTPS, so standards compliant for all your basic connections. And then we have lots and lots of certifications. Some of the big ones recently, ISO 27001. We just recently got FISMA. We have HIPAA certification. We also have EU model clause support, which is very important for agreeing to how the data is going to sit regionally. And then for reliability, we have geo-redundant data centers. That means at least two, but we have more than two, but at least two data centers in each of the three main regions. And so right now the three main regions are sort of North America, Europe, and Asia. And those are the three, depending on where the admin tenant sets up, that's where your data will be based. So users can access it from anywhere, but your data will be stored and restricted to those geographic regions. So you don't have to worry about data moving, say, to the Europe servers. Yes, quick question?
Yes, for recovery purposes, does
So the question, let me repeat it back and make sure I got it right. So the question is, if something happens internally and you have a mixed environment and you want to get a copy of your data that's stored in 365, is there a way to do that? You mean you have to do it through the service. You have to do it through the service. You can't go like a roundabout way and have the data pulled down. You would go into the SharePoint and then make a backup, say, of all of your SharePoint sites and copy that down. Or your mailbox is the same thing. You wouldn't be, and then Link doesn't store anything. It uses Exchange as its backend. So you would be pulling the data that way. And then if you're interested in these topics, there's two upcoming sessions I wanted to call out. We have an entire session on security, privacy, and trust that goes way, way, way more in-depth. This, you know, one slide is the tip of the iceberg of all the precautions we take there. And then also we have a service reliability and disaster recovery. It talks a lot about the whole process and how we designed our resiliency from the ground up to be the most reliable that it can be, and also shows a lot about how the data centers are engineered to handle all kinds of catastrophic events. The next important aspect of Office 365 is that we really give IT a lot of control in how they want to move to the cloud and at what pace, or maybe just some users. There's a lot of different options there. So one is workload migration flexibility. The obvious one here is, since most of you are live at EDU, you've already migrated your mail to the cloud, and that'll be the first thing you'll experience on 365. And so what we mean is just that you can still continue, if you want to maintain your, say, SharePoint servers on-prem, or you want to do Link online, or just move one workload at a time, you can still keep your other ones separate. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing. And in the admin portal, you can choose which services individual users have access to. The other thing is user migration flexibility. Yes, quick question. So the question is, what are the options for archiving with Office 365? So you can do, we have both an archiving option add-on that you can do to have additional archiving. That you're given some archiving if you have the E3 plan, but you can also add on archiving separately. If you set up an Exchange hybrid environment, so you have Exchange servers on-prem, you could do archiving in the manner that you're talking about. We do not support archiving with third-party solutions. So then the user migration, the most common scenario we see there in particular is where you want to keep, say, faculty and staff on-prem, but have your students, but you want it to all appear seamless to the user. And so that's what we mean about with in that area, of being able to have it seem seamless from a GAL perspective, calendars, free busy, being able to email everyone, have the domain all look identical. So the users don't know that you've split your domain and you've split where the users reside, but you're able to control it that way. And then the last thing is just that you're able to access this through your EES, and that transition, I think it's already been baked in as of June 1st into the EES agreements, and so now you're able to have all of your productivity managed kind of with one license. Like, as I mentioned before, you get access to the on-prem bits with your license for the Office 365. So I just wanted to quickly give just a couple of customers that had actually done these different examples I talked about, where one, you have the Kentucky Department of Education decided to go all cloud and manage everything and not rely on any of their on-prem servers to do it. You have Middlesex University that did all of theirs in Exchange base, but kept their staff on-prem, and they were able to set up that hybrid environment. And then Eastern University found the scale of the cloud, being able to very quickly ramp up additional students without having to do a lot of forward planning into hardware or any sort of thing like that. It was really, really compelling use for Office 365 for them. So the next area I want to talk about for Office 365 is to go a little bit more into the hybrid scenarios and talk a little bit about identity. So identity in Office 365, there's really three main setups that you can have. One is a pure cloud ID only setup, which is what you see on the far left there, which is basically you're going to manage all of your IDs through the admin portal in Office 365 and not have any connection or synchronization to your on-prem environment. And so that's typically smaller institutions that would go that route. But it is always an option. And you can still, of course, use PowerShell, et cetera, to manage that. But again, there's no connection to your on-prem. The next and most common is setup is using a dir sync, which is you set up on top of your AD server, and then it just synchronizes your users to Office 365, and the users are still managed through your on-premise AD infrastructure. And with that setting, the thing that is important to note, though, is that passwords are not synced in that scenario. So passwords are different between the cloud, between their Office 365 login and then their on-premise login to the accounts. And then the third option is to use a federation service. For education, we're going to be adding Shibboleth support. And so for education, you will be able to set up single sign-on experiences by setting up either ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services 2.0, or through Shibboleth in order to do that. That allows you, of course, that have the token, when the request comes through for authentication, it actually then redirects to either your Shibboleth provider or to your on-premise ADFS servers. So if for some reason your authentication servers go down, your users will not be able to access Office 365 because we have to then authenticate through you. This is very popular among large organizations because then user identity passwords are not being stored with Microsoft. They're being stored and managed by you entirely. If you're currently using the SSO toolkit for Live at EDU, that is the option you will probably want to move to as you plan your upgrade. All right, so we'll just go take a quick look at some of the admin experience here. Great. So here we've got the admin experience. Notice I'm running this in Firefox. Office 365 supports all of the major browsers, including Safari, Internet Explorer, Google Chrome, and Firefox. And so I'm going to just show you a quick overview. Across the top, you see the options. Your normal users will have the Home, Outlook, if you do just a pure Live at EDU upgrade. You also, if you have A2, get the team site, which is the SharePoint. And then admins will see this additional option for going into the admin center. From this home overview page, this is where you access the Exchange, Link, and SharePoint administration centers. Excuse me. You also can do your setup plans here over on the left-hand side. You can go into the user management. This is where you actually control the users. Now, these users are all set up as Cloud ID users in this example here, as you can see with the person. If you're syncing with Active Directory through dir sync or through dir sync and ADFS or just dir sync by itself, these users will instead have just sort of the double syncing arrows to show you that it's being managed on-prem, and it won't actually let you change any of the details here. But if you do use this, you can do bulk edits, you can reset passwords, you can change all of the user details, you can do a lot of other things to support that user. You can create security groups here. And you can also manage domains. So here I've set up a couple test domains. So Contoso Corp, and I've verified that. And you can actually look at the domain settings here and see how that has been set up. It gives you information for the link setup and what ports you need to have open, along with what you have to put into the client so it connects to your service for VoIP. We go to the domain properties, and then again, it lets you go ahead and set up your DNS record so it actually points to Office 365. In the subscriptions tab, this is actually where you manage your keys and your users. It can show you how many licenses you have, how many are available, and this is where you can get more. Now, this isn't an actual education one, but what you would have here would be an A2 option, and you could just buy those, and of course, they're free, so that's how you would add more users. Or you could mix in other plans like your question earlier, and you'd have those options here. Additional archiving, additional storage space, things like that all show up in this area to manage it. And you can work directly with your EES specialist to do that as well. Another nice area from the admin dashboard is the support. We have an area for quick questions. There's also a diagnostic tool, the wizard that walks you through possible problems. This tool is really good for particularly for if you're having DNS issues or domain setup issues. You can create service requests right from within the portal. Service requests are things that you are having issues with but don't need immediate fixes for. Office 365 always provides 24/7 phone support as well, so if you have anything urgent, you should just call. But this is a nice way if you just want to get something changed with your service, or you want to, say, federate with another university your presence information. You could do that through this portal here, and we have a 48-hour return SLA on the service request through that tool. Another IT important feature is the service health dashboard. So this dashboard shows you how the services are running and gives you information about what their status is across the area, so you can get up to date. And this service health dashboard is specific to your tenant. Yes. That's correct. So the question was, how are students and staff, faculty, how are all of the users supported? Support for your users is handled by you, the institution. We do not provide them a number. There isn't a number for them to call. The number that we give you is only intended for the IT administrators to use. Yeah. That's right. Right now, yeah. Right. So right now, they still could have what's called a partner access license, or an external access, where they would have read-only rights to their SharePoint, but they wouldn't be able to continue to save documents to it. What will be happening there is just they will have just their email, and they can have email for life is sort of the idea with alumni right now. Again, that could change. It's hard to say, but that's the current plan for alumni. And then from the Service Health Dashboard, you can also dig into any option that you want and see if there was sort of an issue, what was going on specifically with that. So it's a good way for you to stay in sync. And also on the Service Health Dashboard page, there's an RSS feed so that you can get notified if there's any changes to your Service Health at any point in time. So that's the admin overview. Yep. Sorry, so repeat the question. For Live EDU, you had what type of site? The only place you can add custom sites to is through SharePoint. So that's how you would manage custom sites, and you could customize SharePoint and create sites that way for your users. Oh, it's part of the branding for you could add custom links. That's right. That part would be gone then. You can't add custom links to Office 365. Yeah, then you could add it there. So for moving on, I want to show a couple scenarios for the end users in Office 365. Talk a little bit about some of the uses for how you can use SharePoint for classroom sites, how it can help with group projects through things like co-authoring. Talk a little bit about some of the note-taking capabilities with the web app, say OneNote web app if you're not familiar with that, and also the fact that, of course, you can access this anywhere for school. So I think we'll jump back over here to the, and we'll switch to a different user. So I have another user here where I've logged in as Bob Kelly, a professor at the Contoso University that we're using for this demo. Here you can see where we've set up a school site, have some information at that level, but also you can have classroom or class-specific sites where people can customize what sort of information they have. They could have class calendars. They can have libraries where they put all the resources, so all the documents that are associated with a class, and then allow the students to be able to download those and consume them. And then also you could have libraries where you allow then submissions or turning the documents in for that. But one of the neat things here is the ability to do co-authoring. So someone can open it up in the web app, or they can just open it up in the actual rich client. So we'll go ahead and open up the Word Rich client here. And then you can imagine, say you want to work with someone on their document. You're able to, say, contact them over link. So we could ping this person. Link, if you're not familiar with it, this is the replacement for Office Communication Server. So you can see you get a nice image of the person. Whenever you hover over people, you can get their contact card, all the ways you can reach them if they're available for a link call, and people have their live status, so you can see if they're online. And it brings in any details you might have from your Active Directory into the contact card. And so once you can also from these windows very nicely escalate into, say, a call or a video conference or into a sharing session where you might be doing a presentation or something or whiteboarding through link. So go ahead and just send a text here asking Lisa to join. Ask her to join the session. And so we can go over and see that here in Mac, She's going to go ahead and get that message from Bob, her professor. Okay, I'll work on it. So she's going to go ahead and join. She's going to go ahead and join for that document. One of the nice things about Office 365, I mentioned earlier, it supports both Mac and PC, but a lot of people didn't realize that we also built in the tools to support SharePoint very integrated into Mac OS X. So this document collection allows you to connect to your SharePoint sites that you use frequently, and you can open up documents and collaborate with other people on those right from within without having to even go to the browser necessarily. So that's actually downloading the document. Just a second, get your question. That actually downloads the document and then allows for them to do co-authoring in the rich client here on this document. Go ahead, what's your question? Blackboard, absolutely, I know that they have some integrations with SharePoint. I don't know if it's specific to an LMS, like SCORM type system, but I know that they also have some integration with Link for doing the whiteboarding and controlling that through Link. Yeah? Yeah, there's a couple of sites available today, and they are planning to add more. If you go to office.com, you can find the SharePoint templates for classrooms. But I think they're planning to do a lot more of that in the next 6 months or so as they start the migrations across for people. So here you can see back on Kelly's screen that actually the people have actually joined. So you can see that Lisa and Bob are both in this document co-authoring it. That's one of the neat features of the 2010 platform or Office 365 right now is that you can actually have users co-author in OneNote, in Word, PowerPoint, and Excel through the web app. So you can get a lot of different editing capabilities and enable lots of people. Theoretically, there is no limit to the number of users. Obviously, it gets crazy once you have, you know, but I know we've tested with up to, I think we had 500 people in one document once just to see if it was theoretically possible, but it wasn't pretty. But it's a very fun capability and makes working together really, really easy. Another neat functionality I talked about was sort of the digital classroom, and I remember always trying to record my lectures and not getting very good quality and always having a hard time getting those back. And so Link offers some great capabilities for this sort of functionality. One of the nice things is right from within Outlook, you have the ability to quickly and easily, when the notification comes up, you can quickly and easily join a pre-scheduled meeting that you have set up with Link. And this allows you to then have as many people as you want join the session with you. You can do things like record the session with, say, for your students. You can throw up a whiteboard space, which allows you to draw and comment in the whiteboard with some of the drawing tools here. And this is where I know they have the integration with Blackboard, where they've actually made it so you can have a large display and actually write on it and have it appear for the students who are online viewing it remotely. So you can draw some doodles on that, and you can get the idea where then, of course, if you're recording all of this, what's great is that students are able to then go back and see all the notes that were being taken in the session. So I wanted just to quickly show us a recording and how powerful those can be. You can have the link recording, but you can also just output a Windows Media File version of it, too, for students to use. But what's neat about the the link integration here is that it actually captures everything that's going on during the during the class. So for example, if you had multiple people speaking, you could filter by that. But then one of my favorite things is whenever you have a long, you know, hour-long lecture, but you just really want, you didn't get good notes, you know, 45 minutes in, but you weren't exactly sure where it was, it actually gives you the ability, because we tied it to the XML, where he was in the slide during that point in the presentation, you can then jump to it, and it jumps the audio to that exact spot. So it makes going back and filling out notes very, very easy for students. Yes? Yeah, the option, you can choose, you can set the default using group policy where the default save folder for those recordings would be. They can save them local, you can save them to SharePoint, you can save them however you would like. So that's a very useful way, again, for people to store classroom or store, you know, sessions and make them easily accessible and give a lot more power into the actual recording itself. And I was just showing a PowerPoint, but again, all of the whiteboarding functionality, all of that would be captured in the session that is being demonstrated so that people could go back and see all of the notes from that class. So now we'll go ahead and open up Safari. Now, notice Safari, again, another browser fully supported with Office 365. Here, we've got, I wanted to show a feature that actually shipped after we shipped Office 365 12 months ago. We actually shipped this. It's not available on-prem. It's just one of those great features that we were able to add because we were managing the service holistically. So here, a document has been emailed to the student, and they're able to actually just click the document and open it in their browser in the web app. And so you can't do this on-prem with Exchange, but it's available through Office 365. And so again, just quickly open up that document and get a preview of it in the web app right from your inbox. Another thing I wanted to show was the note-taking capabilities of Office 365. So this is just using the web app. So without any client on the actual on the computer, we can go into the class resources, go into the notebook, and actually just start editing it. All of the web apps use open standards, so they use JavaScript and HTML to deliver on across multiple platforms the same experience. So a nice thing here, of course, is we could add in, we could insert picture, we can insert clip art, you can actually search all of the office.com clip art databases, which have grown a lot in recent years. So there's a lot of options there, a lot of images, et cetera. So you can insert those from the web. You can also show authors so that over here you can see all of the different people who are editing it. You can see the teacher was editing it before. Lisa's collaborating on it now. Andrea was editing it before that. And so you're able to see all of the users. You can also see different versions of the notebook when it was being edited and go back to those previous ones if you want to see what it was like before those changes were made. So it allows a lot of control over the versions. And SharePoint provides very advanced versioning. And if you're concerned about that, you can set different document libraries. So you would actually be able to, say, prevent, you know, a student after a certain time being able to make changes to a document, right, once they've submitted it. So there's a lot of different version control options for saving and managing those files for the users. All right, so now I want to spend some time talking about the Live at EDU upgrade process and how and what that timeline looks like. So here's the timeline for the upgrade. Right now we're in a phase where you can opt in, but it's a very manual process, and I'll talk about a lot of the steps that are involved. But basically right now it's there's an early onboarding for customers who want to start moving. But it requires a lot of work on the admin side for distributing passwords, et cetera, which I'll go into more detail. Starting towards the end of this summer, then we'll have more tools available to make an opt-in period, but the passwords will be easier because we'll create a tool that allows the users to reset the password themselves. And we'll have some tools to help upgrade from the SSO toolkit in place. So again, that will still be an opt-in period, as it won't be quite as seamless as what comes later. So the beginning of 2013, we will begin scheduling customers to begin migrating their data not migrating. It's actually in the same data centers, but just to be enabling the Office 365 Exchange Online service. And so starting 2013, we'll be scheduling out. We believe it'll take approximately 12 months. And their customers will have the opportunity to reschedule their window for being moved during that time. So let's take a little more look at some of the options and what you do if you say you want to go earlier rather than waiting and how you go about that. So from a system requirements side, you have to make sure that the computers have Internet Explorer 7 at least, and Office 2007. You can use Office 2003 against Office 365, but you only get POP and IMAP email. And so if you want actual Exchange, you have to have Office 2007 or later. And for Mac, it's Office for Mac 2008 Entourage Web Services Edition or later. And then from a provisioning standpoint, you can no longer use the MAV3 tool, and you'll have to replace OLSync and ILM with DirSync, which is the tool I talked about earlier, is the way that you'll sync your Active Directory to Office 365. And right now, if you have non-AD sources that you're syncing from, you'll have to contact your Microsoft representative for a possible pilot solution that they're working on involving the Forefront Identity Management to connect different sources other than AD and syncing those. And then for single sign-on, I've talked already a little bit about the ADFS and Shibboleth Federation services and how you'll want to be planning to use those instead of using the SSO toolkit. Another thing is that the link changes from Outlook.com no longer works as a way to access email. It now becomes Outlook.com and then your domain. So, you know, institution.edu or .org. And then also passwords will be reset, so users will have to update their passwords on their different endpoints for the syncing to continue. And of course, all the more there's more details on that from that side. So from a upgrade experience, the timeline. If you do it now, the biggest thing is the password. So if you do it now, you have to get the passwords first for the users and then distribute them to them and make sure that they somehow print them out or store them in a secondary email, because right now, once you do the upgrade, the users lose access to their Live at EDU account while they have to use the temporary password that you give them to sign into Office 365. Later this summer, we'll have it so that when they go to log in, they're automatically able to reset their password, and that will be the opt-in period solution. And that's what you see, the self-service password under that part of the table. And then you'll also have to make sure that from a provisioning standpoint, you've started using DirSync to start managing your users. And then if you wait until the scheduled time period for Live at EDU, we will copy the passwords from Live at EDU into Office 365, so they'll be able to use those when they first log in. And so that'll be starting in Q1 of 2013. Yep, question? You still need AD, but you don't need ADFS. Right? Yep. Right. So that's right. If you have Shibboleth and you want to do single sign-on federation, Shibboleth and only Shibboleth that's the only other SAML token provider we'll be using with Office 365 for Education at this time. But we will support Shibboleth for single sign-on. Yes, another question? No, so that will change. You'll instead have to do it all through the PowerShell commands for Office 365.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So that's still good. Yep. Another question? On an EES, they're not available direct. Like, you can't go buy them with your credit card, but through an EES agreement, they are available to education institutions. Well, at some point they may have a direct option, but they don't have that today. But right now it is available through that agreement with customers. All right. So what are the roles and responsibilities? What are some of the main things that have to happen if you're on live at EDU today? One of the important things is if you are, have a very low or you've just barely started transitioning to live at EDU and you want to, say, move to Office 365, you could just go and delete your live at EDU account. And the reason you would do that is if you go and try and sign up for Office 365 while you have a live at EDU account, we've actually already reserved all of your namespaces in Office 365 so that someone couldn't go and try and claim them. So we've been planning this upgrade for a long time, and so we reserved all those namespaces. So that you would actually fail if you tried to go and get institution.edu today if you had a live EDU account. So that's an important part. We've gotten some support issue calls about that. So if you have a live EDU but you don't really use it, or you want to start the migration now, like to your question, Sarah, about is it available today, the best way to do it would be to get rid of your existing live EDU, and then you'll be able to use your domain and set it up with Office 365. Second thing is to review and update your institution profile on the service management portal. So right now, someone did an analysis, and there's a bunch of bogus data, and people haven't updated that in a very, very long time. And so if they can't get a hold of anyone at your organization to schedule your upgrade, it's going to be very difficult to move you, and we won't move you. We'll wait until we get a hold of someone. But it's very important that everyone goes in and updates the SMP with current valid administration information and not bogus data, because maybe it was set up by a partner and your team didn't even look at it, and so you don't even know what the information's in there. Of course, you want to make sure you're communicating to your end users and you're letting them know about the changes that are coming. One of the nice things, of course, is that since Live at EDU uses Outlook Live, the interface is basically identical. Just the top bar, the top changes, but the actual email experience is the same for the end users with that part of the migration. Then, of course, there's the password part, which I already covered. You'll also want to make sure that you set up your admin password to Office 365, which you'll be able to do. I have some screenshots of how that part will work. But basically, you'll be doing that through the SMP portal, the SMP when you're setting up and upgrading, moving your users over. From our side, from Microsoft's side, we will be reviewing the tenants when to begin the upgrade. We'll be creating the actual tenants. This is what I meant about us reserving the namespace. We actually then go in and create the tenants in 365 for all of the Live at EDU customers. Then we enroll the school in an Exchange Online plan. So when you saw in the admin portal, when I went to the manage the plans part, we would be doing that part for you and buying enough licenses to cover all of your users. Of course, when buying, they're free, but still you have to tell the system that you're buying it. So we're buying the number of licenses and then giving and assigning those to your tenant to cover all of your users that you have in Live at EDU. Then, of course, we're going to copy all the distribution groups into Office 365. One of the nice things is that because you're on Office on Outlook Live, you're actually sitting in the same data centers as Office 365, and so we're not really copying any of the data to like new locations or different data centers. It's actually we're just moving it into the new tenant, and so it's a very, very easy copy over, and then we're just flipping the switch for things like increasing the mailbox from 10 gigabytes to 25 gigabytes. So that part of it makes it a very easy upgrade. And then the part I'll talk about too is what happens from the end user standpoint about the Live ID. Because what happens now is I talked about how Office 365 uses org IDs, not Live IDs, and so then the IDs have to be decoupled. And so I'll go into a little more detail about what that means. So, right, what happens after you do the upgrade is that users will end up with dual identities. So today, you have a Live ID, you have a single identity, which is through Live ID that you're able to manage through the SMP, and that is the user is able to access their other Live services and Outlook Live. It's controlled by you. You're able to manage it today, but it is a Live ID or the Microsoft account as it's getting rebranded. So. That is still what the user is going to have at the end of this. So what happens then is that the user is left with a self-managed Live ID at the end of the transition. And so they will still have all their documents in SkyDrive, but those documents won't get migrated. They just will have access to them. And they'll still have the same address, email address, but they won't have a mail account when they try and go into a mail from the live services. Then you'll have created an org ID, which will then have all the information for the student that you've synced, and that is now what you'll be managing as the IT administrators. So just a little bit more detail into that. So here you can see, if you look at before the upgrade, right now today, you're able to manage your users through the web client with the PowerShell Exchange Command Center. You push that out to the Live at EDU, and it's actually the Outlook Live tenant that is then creating the Live IDs in Windows Live. And so what's going to happen is that part and that management part is going to break. The user will be able to still access their Live ID, and it will continue. It'll have its same password, et cetera, but it'll no longer be connected, will you be able to manage that Live ID. And then they'll have the Office 365 one. From a user perspective, here you can see that they will still have the ID. I think the one of the more confusing aspects here is the fact that if you look under personal identity, institution identity, they will end up with whatever identity they have. So if they are, sarah@contoso.edu, that will still work as a Live ID. The actual Live ID itself does not change. It doesn't lose the institution.edu domain space, right? It just becomes part of their Windows Live identity, because you can sign up to Windows Live with any email address and make that your account name. So they don't lose that part of it. But do notice, of course, then they have a new password and they have a new org ID number at the bottom there. So that's the split from an end user standpoint. And you have to communicate that to your users. We don't migrate any SkyDrive data, which is important for them to know, but they'll still have access to it, of course. Any questions on this part? Yeah. Right, you will be losing the ability to manage those Live IDs. So the question was, today we're giving staff and faculty provisioning them a Live account for SkyDrive, and what happens after this migration? Yeah, you will not be able to manage their accounts in any way after this. You won't be able to deprovision SkyDrive. Yes, they'll still be able to access their SkyDrive after they leave. Yes, question. Yes, because Live IDs, because they're stored in, so the question is, will people be able to go and then sign up for a Live ID with, institution.edu in the future? The answer is yes, they could do it today. Unless that Live ID is owned by you, right? But I could go and sign up with any email address and create a Live ID account, because it's independent. It's an independent ID structure from, say, the org IDs, right? So it doesn't actually have anything to do with your domain space. So that's what's going to happen there. People would still be able to create a Live ID like that, but it doesn't have any impact, right? They're not going to be able to access anything. It's just going to be a generic. It would just be a generic, Hotmail account or a generic SkyDrive account with their email address. Yes. So the question was, what options will be available for file storage and disk with faculty and staff going forward? So that with Office 365, the storage is really all managed by SharePoint. That's really where you manage all of your files and have them stored. And SharePoint, you'll have you have very advanced controls because it's not really specific to one individual person. You do have My Sites with SharePoint where people can have their data in their My Site, but once they leave your organization, they won't necessarily have access to that anymore unless you do the thing I talked about earlier, which is set up a read-only external access mode. But most likely, the data would just stay, you know, on-prem in your organization, on Office 365, but unique to their organizational ID. So there wouldn't be any access to it once they leave and you deprovision their account.
Are there similar tools for, recently I know they've been real good enhancements to the SkyDrive environment, made you map the drive to it, and those other things made it really easy to use,
or similar things? Yeah, it's not quite as seamless as SkyDrive, I'll definitely say that, because, I mean, the new tools are really nice. I'll just quickly show you the number one thing I recommend IT does for that part is you can use group policy to then create. So this is actually connected to SharePoint right here. You see, so what I did is I just created a favorite to that folder structure. So it just appears to the user as their classroom folder, and people can create them themselves. But you're able to write scripts that would provision, say, a couple standard ones that people might be using. And there's also their My Sites that they could provision here, that you could just add to your favorites list here for storing documents. And then it appears to the user just like any location. A nice thing, too, with Office 365 is if they have it has something called the Office Document Cache. And so if they go offline and they were working on a file, but they, you know, for some reason they lose internet connection, the document cache will just store that file, and the next time they have internet access, it'll upload it to that SharePoint place without any problems there. It's also very network efficient because of the upgrades we made when we moved to the OpenXML format with Office 2007. The syncing actually just syncs the deltas between the files, and so it's very network efficient. So if they only changed, you know, 30 kilobytes of text in the document, it's only going to sync that change. It won't download the entire file and upload the entire file each time. Yes, question. SharePoint is browser agnostic. There are a couple of things that ask for ActiveX controls for some of the advanced things. I'm not sure if those are even enabled in the plan one that you get with A2, but they're not very significant. They're just some enhancements to the UI. So you have full browser support, and those are going. We're phasing those out anyways. Anything that isn't. Browser agnostic, we're getting rid of. We're moving fully. All of our stuff is fully open standards and works across browsers. Okay, switch back here. So I want to get to some screenshots of the experience. Oh, and then this, of course, will be posted after the session, so you can have this nice list of links if you want more information on the upgrade. This will help you go through the steps and checklists. Yeah. The My Sites, the question was, what are the quota for the My Sites? I believe, so the SharePoint, you get 10 gigabytes plus 500 megabytes for each user. So you have a lot of space there, up to 25 terabytes of space. And then for My Sites, you get, I believe it's 1 gigabyte today, and they're looking at possibly increasing that in the future. But the idea is that they wouldn't necessarily be storing everything in a My Site because they might be storing things in, say, the classroom site as well. So you have data in, or you have storage in two locations, and the data quantity of the My Sites is separate from your SharePoint tenant data, right? So if you have 500 users, they each have a gigabyte, so 500 gigabytes. Plus you have the 10 plus the 500 megabytes times users, so you end up with a lot of storage space, and you can get additional very cheaply. I believe it's 2 cents per gigabyte additional extra. But that price might be different for EDU. All right, so let's go through some of the screenshots. So here we've got the service management portal. And this is where we want to make sure that you update your institution profile with actual contact information so we can get a hold of you. And then, of course, we have what are the steps for going through and upgrading your domains. We want to make sure that you're able to get information about the what's going to happen, and then also what's the status of your domains. So first, you have to upgrade your domains, and that's the first step that happens. Email addresses are hidden at that stage. Then you upgrade your users. Now, before you upgrade your users, of course, this is where you have to make sure you get your, you're going to give them their passwords. So once you start that, are you sure you want to do it? You're going to have to create your admin password. So this is where you're going to create the one that you, the admin, will use to administer Office 365. And while this is going on, your users are not going to be able to access their email until you complete that step while they're being moved over. So here you can go ahead and go over so you can see there's the new admin logging into the Office 365 portal. And this is where you'll set up your emergency contact information in case you lose your password and need to reset it as the admin. This is just some where you can get some of your things I showed you kind of in the demo. So here you make sure you have your users and you can reset their password. And then you can send yourself an email with all those passwords, and then you have to distribute these to the users today. This is the step where if you wait a little bit, this will become a lot easier because users will be able to self-reset their passwords for Office 365. So if you don't have a good way to do the distribution and make sure you're going to manage that, I definitely recommend you wait until we have that process ready for everyone. Then if you need to add more, well, so first, remember, you'll be put into Exchange Online, but this is where you'll be able to then select, oh, no, actually, I want to go ahead and enable the A2 and get SharePoint and get Link Online. And so this is where you do it in the purchase section like I was talking about, and you'll be able to then add that for, you know, as many accounts as you have as you need. So then from end user perspective, I talked a lot about the password reset, so just show you. So today, of course, you can use all of these addresses to access email, the point being your users won't be able to use these to access your school email anymore. They have to use just the one that is outlook.com/your institution. The things like the branding and SkyDrive that they have at the top, that those will all go away inside of the Office 365 portal. The branding inside of their live accounts will also go away once the upgrade is done. It will begin redirecting once you've started your migration, and then it will ask that the user signs in correctly. If they try to go to, say, outlook.com, that's the error box that they would get, so that they have to make sure. And then if they try to go to the Hotmail while it's being upgraded, the email flow is still active, but they won't be able to access their actual accounts. Here you can see where they've actually gone ahead and which URLs they can use to access their account. And then here's where this is the password reset. This is when they first log in. And this is the step that right now, they only get this after you've emailed them the password, but it'll be automated, or not automated, but it'll be self-service later this summer during that opt-in phase, and then it will be the passwords will be synced again in 2013. Yes, question?
Any restriction on using the same kind of CNAME or alias
So just to make sure I understand it, so you're saying you have it in two, you're going to have it in two 365 accounts? Is that?
No. So, for example, in regular Office 365, there's no problem setting up a
CNAME.
Right. Yep. No restriction being able to do that here as well.
Right. You could set up a CNAME like that, like mail.organization in Office 365. That's fine.
How does that impact
Well, you'd have to get them, you know, signed for that domain. So then, continuing on, the end users go ahead and put in their new password. Notice the branding will have gone away, and they'll have, this is their new, for just when you have just Exchange Online, this is what the service dashboard looks like without the SharePoint and the team site. Also, in their live accounts, their Windows Live will lose that dual branding, and the Hotmail, for a temporary amount of time, will redirect to Outlook.com. That's just a bug that'll go away after a few hours. But then their SkyDrive documents and stuff will still be there. But again, those will be now independent. You won't be able to manage those anymore. This is the temporary if they do a temporary redirect. And then again, I'm just talking about the domains that they can use. And then of course the SMP itself will go away at a certain point there once you've done your migration. So now that's live at EDU migration. Any other questions on that, or Let's see here, I want to do a couple minutes going through some of the service updates that we've released. So yeah, you have a question? No, once you go through the portal and you did that upgrade domain, it will then start. Mailflow will still be working, but your users will not be able to access their email. If for what you're thinking, you probably should just wait until we do the later migration instead of during this opt-in period, where then the users will be able to keep working until we do the upgrade for you of your domains. No, you will not be able to have branding in the Outlook web app access after the Office 365. The most customizable spot in Office 365 is really SharePoint. That's where you can pretty much change everything and customize it to basically 100%. It's HTML, and so you can pretty much customize those pages extensively, but OWA you cannot. Okay, so we talked a little bit about service updates. One of the best things about Office 365 is the fact that we get to push out new features, like the ability to open attachments in the web apps that I showed earlier. So really, we're moving Office 365 to a much faster release cadence. As we had in the past, you know, we typically were releasing new versions of Office every 2 to 3 years or so. But Office 365 gives us the opportunity to update our services much more frequently. And so we've kind of adopted an annual release cadence with additional updates sort of filtering out roughly quarterly. But you might, say, have 1 month where only Exchange does some updates, and then the next month SharePoint does some updates. And so also, you know, what this allows us to do is be more nimble in taking feedback from customers to be able to get what some of the top features are and actually then roll those into the updates. And so we're able to more quickly add some of those features to the service. This is a high-level list of some of the features we've added since Office 365 launched. We've got lots of things in the productivity, like I talked about the web app, but also some of the downloads for, say, the Mac Office, being able to have the partner access license so that you can have external partners access SharePoint, which was a big request, so they could view documents, work on them. Added support for new browsers like IE9s and Chrome actually came just a little bit after we shipped, so we were able to add additional browser support. And then we added 22 countries from we shipped, so we're now in over 67 markets total. And that number's constantly growing. We're always adding new markets to the Office 365 service, and we're able to provide more languages. We added Portuguese later on as well. From a security standpoint, I talked about some of the certifications that we got later, such as FISMA, which we just recently got, but also HIPAA came later. And then from a management standpoint, some of the improved Exchange, particularly Exchange Service Pack 1, had a lot of the really good migration tools for making the hybrid or stage migration much easier with the CAS server. So that came, again, after we shipped Office 365. Other things like CRM integration and some of the like 64-bit version of the DirSync tool. So just going through a couple of these, we demoed this one where you can open attachments right inside the web apps. This is a great one, again, just very, very heavily asked for. It's been asked for on-premise for a long time, but we were able to deliver it in 365 because we have control over those servers. We added sender photos inside of OWA. So again, just like you have that nice picture inside of Link, we were then able to, you know, use that API and populate it inside of OWA. Able to do the external sharing. This is where we were able to have if you want to have, say, a partner access a SharePoint library, but they aren't in your domain, you don't manage them as a user, but you just need them to work on a document with you, this is how they're able to set up an ID to be able to access those SharePoint sites. And so this is one solution for your alumni as you're thinking about if they need to have document access. Yes? They're constantly growing it. Right now, I believe it will stop working at 10,000, but you can request more through a service request. It'll stop working, but you have to ask for a service request to get more. So they'll scale it for your university needs. We also added improved PDF support. That was a big thing in SharePoint. Being able to actually just open those directly in Adobe Reader and be able to mark them and also just have them recognized in SharePoint easily. The SharePoint site recovery, this is a good one in case someone deletes a class site or something that you didn't realize maybe the teacher did it. So you give them the controls to be able to do it, but they still decide they need it back later. You're now able as an administrator to recover that data for the user. The Office web apps have had a lot of updates as well. We're definitely wanting to improve these, including better print support, better open document standard support, native IE9, the ability to edit shapes in PowerPoint. And then Link has had some additional things here for privacy modes, the mobile users. So I don't know how many of you have used the Link mobile app. Has anyone, lots of people downloaded that and used it? So I'll just quickly show that here on Link. So there's Link mobile apps available for Android, iOS, Windows Phone, and people are in also for iPad. And so here you can see you get the user, you're able to change your status easily. You can go and look at your contacts. So there's the teacher that they were collaborating earlier with. If you start a chat with them, and then we'll show up in the conversations, conversation window. So if you go back to chats, you have it there. And then also nice is all of your meetings are here, so you can have one-click join to meetings. So you're able to click join meeting, and then it will actually call you back. And it uses the Link server so that it brings your presence and your identity. So you're not just a random phone number showing up in the Link console. You're actually associates it with your name and everything like you'd expect there. And they just recently relaunched some nice updates to that for the iPad as well. Yes, sir, question in the back. So Link, you can set Link to record. The question was, how does Link record anything for IM conversations? Yes, so for Link, you can have it save conversations, and it uses the Exchange database as it actually just creates a mail folder and saves all of the conversations. And then you can obviously use some of the e-discovery tools in Exchange to sift through those if for some reason you need to, for whatever reason. Some online meeting enhancements that have come to Link, being able to create meetings through the Link web app as well, and then also the recording that I showed you, and that's actually a screenshot of where you can change, but you can use group policy to set where they store the recordings, but that's where you can also change it or publish the recordings later on. The troubleshooting tool for admins, and there's a one for end users, but this can be very useful for just when you're setting up Office 365. And then, of course, the password reset for admins. So the admin can actually get their password if they lose it, and the ability to actually text you and call you. We were getting a lot of admins losing their passwords and calling support, so we automated that system. So I'll take some more questions here at the end, but just summary quickly. We walked through, went over what was in Office 365 for education, gave you some scenarios, how it could be useful, how it's a nice upgrade from Live at EDU, walked you through the Live at EDU upgrade process, where we are today and what you should expect in the next 12 months, and then also talked about some of the service updates and how we're going to continue to improve the process. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to come see the session, and also come to our booth if you have additional things, and I'll take more questions. Yes.
Clarify the archiving options between E2 and E3, and specifically what features in the auditing console are going to be available, not available, if you're free versus the paid.
Yeah, Can we take that one offline? I want to give you the exact right information on that one, and so I'm not exactly sure which ones are in E3 versus. There are differences, though. You do not get full functionality between the two. Yeah. Yes. Through SharePoint administration, you can create partner access licenses. They're called PALs, partner access licenses. And so through the administration, you then can enable partners to create their ID. It will then you can then send them an email, and then they have to go and create an ID to be able to access it. And then you're able to revoke their access later, right? You manage them. Yes? No, A2 is free for students and faculty and staff.
Okay. Because in the upgrade wizard, it only says, it just mentioned students. Okay.
Well, yeah, this screenshot might have been old. The slide I showed at the very beginning was the accurate as it stands today. Things have changed, like the fact that we added the alumni to the exchange online. That was not originally there, and now it is there. So you could see additional things come online at later times. The alumni exchange online, that is free. Yeah, so they can, so not for alumni. Alumni do not get A2, but basically the idea is that once someone becomes an alumni, they lose access to your internal websites, but they're able to keep their email for life. That's the idea. All right, thanks everyone.